countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, it is now time for more of the Last Comic Shop Podcast.
That is right. We are opening up the shop, turning on our microphones, and getting ready to talk comic books with Paul Cornell this week.
That's right. We've got a real life comic book professional guest who's not only done comic books, he's done television, he's written novels, he's been all over the place for years, and he's really good at what he does.
Absolutely he is. And I'm the host with the most, Andy Larson. I'm kind of good at what I do as well. And that's keeping these two yokels in line. That's my co-host, Jay Scott and Chad Smith. But you're not here to listen to us. You're here to listen to Paul Cornell. That's why you tuned in. So let's go ahead and get him on the horn now.
Do we have a more British song we can play?
Anarchy in the UK?
You hear the TARDIS? There's the TARDIS. I threw that in because I got a lot of Doctor Who questions for him. You better believe it. J.A., favorite Doctor Who episode? Do you have one?
Is it the Claws of Fu Manchu?
The Talons of Wang Chiang. What's your favorite Doctor Who stuff, Chad?
Don't know. Never watched it.
Oh! Don't tell him that. No, he's about to join. All right, we are here with Paul Cornell. Yay! Paul, it is so exciting to have you on the Last Comic Shop, sir. How are you doing out there in merry old England?
I'm fine.
Well, I thought the Muppet Show was like popular over there at one point.
Oh, I always empathize with Kermit. That was a full on Kermit.
Yes, I feel like it starts the interview off right. When you get the Kermit treatment, you're exciting. You're like Steve Martin. You're coming on the show. It's wonderful.
I rather feel I couldn't live up to it. That's the trouble. I'm like, wow, that's a high bar to leap.
Well, for me, sir, I know for a fact that I feel like you're going to be living it up just for me, because, again, I've been a fan of your work since I was a kid in short pants. Well, not maybe that far back, but definitely a teenager, because as many may know on The Last Comic Shop, I'm a massive Doctor Who fan. And so your books during the mid 90s, when Doctor Who was dead. Like, nobody paid attention to it. Nobody cared. But like, there were these great books coming out from either the New Adventures or my favorite, which was the Missing Adventures, where used the old Doctors. I remember Goth Opera. That was one of my faves.
Got an audio version of that coming out later this year.
Oh, nice.
No way.
Full cast audio with Davison, Sarah Sutton, etc.
Wow. Very cool. Well, I'm going to have to pick that up. But then another book that I had by my bedside at all times was the Discontinuity Guide. Because again, like it seemed like to be the precursor to like the internet, you know, like the internet was out at the time, but it was kind of like, you know, what people do with like reviews. They're like, oh, here's the best dialogue. And here's this. What was the idea for that particular book?
We'd written a book about all classic television for Guinness, the three of us, me, Martin Day and Keith Topping. And we wanted to write something about Doctor Who. And we didn't feel we had the academic learning about the show, the depth of research of some of the guys we knew. So we did something which was about the viewer's experience. And we kind of invented a new genre of, popular TV handbook doing so. Basically, we just wanted to talk about what it was like to watch Doctor Who.
And again, it was a breath of fresh air because I had read all these other kind of review books in the past. And then it was like, these were the things that I was thinking about, like your review of City of Death.
Yeah. It's always City of Death.
Like, this is like Emma Thompson raining rose petals down. Just like, yes, this is how I feel when I watch City of Death.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's one of mine. What did we say about Colony in Space, that it was like being, that Keithy said it was like being whipped with barbed wire or something.
Yikes.
There are some treasures. If you haven't read it, go find a copy of the Discontinuity Guide, especially if you're a Doctor Who fan. It is a treat. Absolute treat. But we want to pivot real quickly away from Doctor Who because we're a comic book show.
Okay. I want to get to the the beginning. I want to find out from Paul, how did you get your start? What was your first comic book? When did you discover that you were a writer, or wanted to be a writer? And you know, sort of give us a quick synopsis of your early career.
Your origin story, yes, if you will.
Well, it happened when a cricket ball flew in through my window. I should become a cricketer.
They're a superstitious and cowardly lot, for sure.
The house was always had comics, from earliest nursery comics like Playhour and Pippin through my dad bringing home Avengers Weekly number one with issue 4 of the Avengers in the front and scary Steve Ditko, Doctor Strange in the back.
Nice.
And because he said, this is your sort of thing, meaning that he wanted to read it. And a few years later, Warlord and Battle, DC Thompson and Fleetway's joint separate war titles, which very much reflected my dad's own wartime experience. And also there was Donald and Mickey with Carl Barks, classic Disney stuff. And you know, always comics in the house. So aspiring to write comics was always in the writer DNA there. But I became a writer out of horrific school experiences. I started writing then, and I've written a novel about them, an autobiographical horror novel called Chalk. And I started writing as a form of escape and revenge. That became Doctor Who fan fiction, which I sent to fanzines and got my first acceptances in fanzines. And the very slow internet of fanzines, 6 months later, you would hear what somebody thought. And that was sort of the start of it. I made my way up through Doctor Who fiction and started hanging out with people like Doctor Who magazine editor John Freeman and Peter Darvall Evans, who was creating the New Adventures at Virgin Books that you mentioned. He put out the word across fandom and in the magazines and in the fanzines that he was after fan fiction writers to write these new books as well. And so I pitched something that had been some of my fan fiction, and that got accepted and became Revelation, my first Doctor Who novel.
Right.
And around the same time, John Freeman, who I was socially hanging out with, commissioned me to write my first Doctor Who comic and helped me through it and taught me how to write comics, basically. So, and so from the very beginning, I was getting commissioned in two different forms. And so there's always been Doctor Who at the heart of my writing, sort of the golden thread through it and the thing that always leads to the next medium.
Right.
And the wonderful thing was I was part of a group of peers, all of whom were very competitive. And it was like the right stuff. We saw who was getting the next flight, you know, who got the next book. And we were always thinking, well, if they can do it, I can do it. And
there you go. An iron sharpens iron sort of philosophy there.
Yeah. Virgin really catered to that. They would hold big parties where, you know, we would all cluster around Terrence Dix to you know, hear him holding court. And they would also hand out at the same time, you know, questionnaires as to what do you want to do with the line now? What do you think we should do next? And so it was a hothouse environment for developing talent. A lot of those people went on to the new show, apart from anything else, to spread out amongst the rest of Doctor Who medium.
So Russell T, he was part of that. He was part of that group.
He was the one who wasn't. Everybody else.
Okay.
You know, Moffat was in there. Chris Chibnall up in Liverpool.
Yes.
Gatiss, certainly. Rob Shearman. And the people who've come since also. So much of the new show was already done in the New Adventures.
Yes.
And it's extraordinary how many concepts just sort of come through on screen. It was an amazing time, and I was so lucky to be a part of it and to kind of be the first guy who went up just through sheer accident. Because the stuff I did that hadn't been done in those first three books, Mark Platt was doing exactly the same stuff one book later.
Right.
And all it would have taken was a little bit of delay on my part, and he'd have gone first.
Oh.
But what a terrific life to have stumbled into.
I did have a question about that. You said the first comic was that one that you worked with. I think it was for Doctor Who Monthly, right?
Yeah.
Was it the Dalek story? Was it the one where he brought back? No, it was a different one.
It was called Stairway to Heaven.
Okay.
It was just a little one-off about an artist and building a stairway.
Okay.
And Sylvester McCoy's trip.
I was just curious because I think that was the first time I saw your name in a was that Dalek story where he brings back Absalon Dalek, and because I was, you know, Daleks bring people to the yard, so I came to the yard to read that story, and I was just like, oh, there's Paul's, and I remembered your book, your book Revelation. So I was like, oh, that's neat that he's moving over into comic books. So you wrote that, and then again you become now a script writer. You know, you're now a comic book writer. I had a quick question about writing the difference between the two, because one of our favorite books on the Last Comic Shop that we talk about all the time is Understanding Comics, right? And the differences between television as a medium, where like it's all passive and, you know, you don't have to fill in any of the blanks, but then like comic books, like you see one panel and then you're like, okay, I got to fill in the blanks with my imagination as to how they move over to this other panel.
Well, it's always very difficult to change mental gears between the three different media. Well, four if you count audio. Basically, the newbie mistake in comics is, and this is something that a writer of TV will just immediately do, a panel description saying he runs out of the room and slams the door behind him, which will result in the artist drawing a panel of a door. or the very best, perhaps with a slam effect around it.
Right.
But doors in comics, good doors, aircraft, horses. I always write my comics in the past tense to make myself think of them as still pictures.
Okay.
Okay.
She's put the glass on the table. There is no question of movement actually happening, you know, if you see what I mean. There is the moment we have seized for the still picture, because it's a little mental jump you've got to make if you're used to writing for continuing movement. I'm currently writing, and I won't say what it is, a comic where they mostly like you to put two panels on a page, and you can really stretch to three at the most. It's a digest size.
Okay.
And it's kicking my bottom.
Because just that structure.
Yeah, there's no law of threes. Yeah. You know.
When you only have two.
Listeners, I'm making a little frustrated expression at the end of every one, two. And that's getting used to an entirely different format within the medium of comics. And
I was just going to ask, but my question is, because you have your hands in so many different areas, the comics, the screenwriting, the movie writing, the audio dramas, what advantage do you think that gives you as a writer when it comes to crossing the boundaries into the different types?
I think it gives you perspective that you can kind of see that medium from the outside.
Okay.
It's certainly really been healthy for my career in that I can always move from one to the other. And sometimes moving from one to the other feels like a holiday for part of your brain. So
there you go.
You know,
a favorite of the different mediums?
I think it's prose. You can set the lighting, you can do everything. You can move back and forth in people's heads. And interiors are a lot harder to get to in any other medium, really. I miss the thought bubble a great deal.
Oh, yeah.
But I noticed that Al's brought them back on Thor, which is nice to see.
that book is great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But going back earlier, you basically have to force yourself to step out of the medium to reestablish what's going on.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's really nice to be able to concentrate on one thing and then go and do another. And I've been so lucky being able to do that. It does mean that I'm not really known for one thing, which gets in the way sometimes. A really successful novelist, people know what to expect. And with me, people really don't know what to expect. And that gets in the way sometimes. But all in all, I'm quite lucky to have been able to do lots of different things.
I was going to say, it sounds like that could be pretty fulfilling, though, not having to be pigeonholed.
Yeah, I mean, you're winning these awards for all these different things, too. So,
thank you. Yes, I guess. But you know, with a writer, it's always, oh, what's wrong? You know, we are professionally glass half full people, half empty people. Yeah.
I quickly wanted to pivot back to comic books in the terms of, again, that can sometimes be a very collaborative effort, even more than even a movie, because like, again, with a movie or a TV show, you might write the script and then like it's handed off to a director and a producer and all these actors. But with a comic book, it's a little more intimate, in which you're working with a penciler, an inker, and ultimately you may have discussions with these folks. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, it's a collaborative thing. I was just curious, have there been artists over your time that you have thought you had a really good rapport with and felt like these are folks that I love working with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been a few, but I think the very best is Sally Cantarino on I Walk With Monsters, who could read my mind. And I ended up cutting out so much dialogue from that book because she was just doing it in the expressions. And when you can do that, that feels so great. And she's actually spoiled me for other artists, because when you work with an artist whose forte is not character acting, and then you haven't written all that dialogue, you find yourself adding a lot of extra dialogue in. But no, Sally Cantarino, I think, is the best artist on earth. And I've kept trying to work with her again, but unsurprisingly, she's in quite high demand.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's something we comment on sometimes. We'll be reviewing Bronze Age books on this show, and that's one thing that chafes JA's sometimes, is just how they explain everything that's going on in the panel.
I don't need the exposition bubble to show to tell me what I'm looking at on the page.
No, look, that car is on fire. There's a car.
It's tough sometimes for great writers to understand, like, no, I can let the pictures tell the story.
So it's great that you were able to team up with somebody that was able to capture the expressions on folks' faces, where you had to, like, this is superfluous now. I don't need to say this.
Yeah.
And so
I mentioned it before that you've won a BSFA award, an Eagle Award for comics, a Hugo for your podcast. That to me is quite interesting. And that's the Hammer podcast.
It's a different
one. How do we get a Hugo for this?
Well, actually, you just have to go and hang out in the spaces Hugo voters notice.
that's the trick.
Hugo, it's a science fiction podcasting. And a few years ago, I was me and a bunch of all-star science fiction writers, of which I was very much... You know the other member of the Rat Pack, the British comedian nobody remembers. There was one. I was that. And because it was a superstar SF writers and Paul podcast, we won the Hugo's first podcasting award 2 years in a row, the first 2 years. And then we said, no, we are now removing ourselves from nominations because this is embarrassing. because it's just pretty easy to bring together four huge fan bases and get them to, and my handful of people too. But no, I now co-host with Lisbeth Miles the Hammer House of Podcast, said he, putting on his podcast voice. Good evening. And we're watching the Hammer horror movies in UK release order, and we're nearly there. We got a year left. We're now onto the modern ones.
Okay. Yeah. Any particular favorites? I Greater Mass in the Pit. I mean, I kind of like the original BBC version more, but the movie, it's interesting. It's got
it's a pretty good condensation, I think. I'm obviously the Curse of Frankenstein, Brides of Dracula. A lot of the Jimmy Sangster black and white thrillers, like Taste of Fear or Scream of Fear in America, those were a real revelation, seeing all of those and seeing how good they were. And movies like The Anniversary and The Nanny, which are underappreciated. There's another Nigel Neal, actually, The Witches, which is tremendous, with Joan Fontaine. So, yeah, we've uncovered quite a few along the way we weren't expecting and hadn't seen before.
Very cool. Well, we've got more comic books and great talk with Paul Cornell coming up right after these commercial breaks. So stay tuned for more of The Last Comic Shop. We're going to be covering, again, the bread and butter of today's episode, Con and On. So stay tuned for that.
Hi, it's Carlo Calentuan, Last Comic Shop podcast listener and comic book tragic here in the Philippines. My boy. When I'm in the US, I'm always on the lookout for a good deal on boards, bags, boxes, and all other manner of comic book related supplies. And that's why I love to go to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD to get 10% off of all my orders. Not only do I get a discount on everything I buy at BCW, but I'm able to support the podcast when I use LCSPOD at checkout. So if you're in need of comic book supplies, head over to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD. Oh, and guys, I'm still waiting for that Tressy review. Come on, when is it?
What happens when 20-something Madison is zapped into old-time radio shows? No technology.
Why won't it go to voicemail?
No Starbucks.
Don't call yourself a coffee shop if you only sell drip coffee.
And no one is PC.
I don't need no lip from...
Were you about to say woman? Because I'm wearing a gun and I have no idea how to use it.
Madison on the Air serves to highlight the way we were and the way we are today, with original radio drama scripts adapted to include the modern-day Madison as she joins famous characters from radio's past, including Sergeant Joe Friday.
Just the facts, ma'am.
I've never actually said that.
Marshal Matt Dillon.
We're not having a shootout with a 10-year-old kid.
I'm too woke to be a part of this.
Superman.
I didn't realize how cold it would be flying like this.
I have to get into the higher atmosphere.
And many more. Visit us on the web at madisonontheair.com or find us pretty much any place podcasts can be found.
You talk so old-timey. I have no idea what you said, but it's adorbs.
All right, welcome back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and we are talking about Con and On as our read pile review for this week. And anytime we can have the actual writer of said book on the show, it is always a treat for all of our Last Comic Shop fans. So we've got that writer. It is Paul Cornell. And this book you can pick up in your local comic book shops today. It is available in trade, but it also was not only in trade, Chad, but it was in single issues, correct?
That's right. So this, it came out last year in 2023 in single issues. The trade was just released last week. It's Con and On from Ahoy Comics.
So Paul, we had a lot of questions about this book, but before we get to that, J.A., do you want to give a quick 10-cent synopsis about what kind of sort of happens in this?
It's sort of the life of the Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con, I assume, starting out.
A satirical fictional
comic. Yes. And it focuses on several people. There's a sort of a Robert Altman-esque thing going on. You follow these people throughout the years as the Comic Con grows and the industry changes. You see how that affects a lot of the different people in it, from a writer and a burgeoning artist to a B-list actor who ends up becoming a podcaster. Very much in the Will Wheaton realm of work. And that's really sort of where we get to. One of the big questions was, is this just a straight up Roman Eclef, or is it just drawing from the larger Comic Con milieu? So not everyone is, oh, that's got to be Kirby or that's Ditko.
Well, thank you very much for saying Altman, because that was entirely my intention. That was spot on as to what I was after doing a Robert Altman movie. It's loads and loads of true anecdotes from lots of people I know, some of mine, some that have happened to friends of mine, some that are just stuff you hear in convention bars when pros talk to each other. And there are very much types, I think, who represent lots of different people. For instance, across these 30 or 40 years in the life of a big convention, we've got three Brit comic creators who are amongst the first wave of Brits to work in American comics. And they are a dapper gentleman in a suit and tie, a cosmic explorer, and a drunken wild man. And I think that covers everybody in British comics.
Oh, yes!
So you fuse the Ellis, the Ennis, the Grant Morrisons all together, and...
Yeah,
because that was our we're really excited to play Who Dis.
Yeah,
like your sci-fi writers in the beginning. Who are they? Is it Harlan Ellison? Is it Ray Bradbury?
I think it's safe to say the nice one is sort of a take on Ray Bradbury, and
nice.
Because you know he was always there at San Diego Comic Con, and
you mean Vista Del Mar.
Yes, Vista Del Mar Comic Con, and he was very, very much part of that convention from its origins. And also, I wanted to just mention in passing how all this got started, which was that Star Trek fans were kicked out of the science fiction fandom, and had to go and create a fandom of their own. Hence, Comic Cons all over the place and being enormous, and. It's basically a lot of journeys which illustrate how much the industry has changed across time and how much it stayed exactly the damn same. And a lot of the nasty stuff as well. But I also wanted to talk about failure in that one of our characters gets early success and then just plummets. And I've seen that happen so much, and it kind of happened to me, but then I sort of kept bouncing like some kind of weird trampoline. But I just sort of wanted to illustrate the extraordinary pressure people in the industry are under. Kind of the hero of it all is really the only fan we visit in any detail, who
Val.
Yeah, she's just pure and wonderful. She just likes a particular actor and wants to support him, and is always representing his best interests, even when he isn't.
I love that you have that, just because we're no stranger to Comic Cons, and I've worked at Comic Cons on the other side of the table. We've tabled at cons and done all these things. It's very easy to pick at the negatives of Comic Cons and Comic Con culture, and there's definitely, you know, you'd be lying if there wasn't that capitalistic side of it and all the other stuff that happens. But also, one of the things I found from working there was seeing those interactions and how much it means to people, and even those opportunities where people that don't feel like they belong anywhere else to have a place. And I felt like you definitely find a way to capture some of that in there.
I mean, yeah, it's not a cynical book. I think I try and tell the truth. But it's also got the joy in it. It's also got the good stuff.
Well, and I think that's what makes it so, some of those nice stories so much more powerful, because it doesn't feel like, oh, this is just whitewashed or you know, you've gone over a lot of the bad stuff that was going on in the industry and chose not to write about it. That's why I really love the journey of that actor, Jeff Kent, where he was, you know, he'd gone from high to like, you know, straight to video type stuff to almost bombing out, and then rediscovering himself and his journey to be very happy with who he was. And people were saying, oh, looks like he's become a failure. And somebody else said, no, I don't think he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
My question on that is, did you have that supportive agent who doesn't necessarily make it on to see the successes later on the other side of the dip?
I think I've had a few. This is going to sound really pretentious, but one of the things I do sometimes say to myself, either out loud or in my head, is the audience will save me.
And
I kind of believe that. I really like the audience. You know, how many times we've all been heartened as pros by, you know, just having the experience that we're so privileged to have, that somebody will come up to you and tell you that they really liked something you did. And we could all do with having that in our lives, and we get it on a semi-regular basis. And that's worth everything. I do, however, one thing that did happen to me that happens in this book is, and this actually happens on a reasonably regular basis, when, you know, like I'm signing beside somebody incredibly successful who's got a really long line and I've got nobody at all, because actually my audience is of a size where one will come along every couple of minutes. There's going to be a queue at the start, and I'm fine with that. You'll get somebody coming up and going, wow, I thought there would be a queue for you, but you can just walk right up to you. There's nobody here at all. Wow.
And then they name the wrong thing that they thought you worked on.
Kid goes on and on in the book and thinks he's the wrong person, and then when he finds out he's not that person, just wants to talk about that person. That's happened to me.
But there's those other moments in the book where, again, you have fans that come up and they're like, why don't you have a line? Like, you are a legend. Like, you wrote this, you wrote this, you wrote this. I don't think it's pretentious at all to think, again, I think that's just maintaining positivity.
Yeah.
And I think it's realistically, I mean, we're having you on the show. I gushed about Doctor Who before. I mean, Chad's champing at the bit to gush about your work on Captain Britain.
And even though the English part of me sort of wants to fend that off, at the same time, it's a great privilege. It's wonderful. And thank you. So many of my peers were a little afraid of it as well, because because that way rubbishness lies in terms of our own writing. You know, if we start
to believe the hype,
if we start to think we're good, then we lose the internal editor that needs to believe we're rubbish.
That constant self-doubt that drives
you. Absolutely.
I was going to say, I'm notorious for having, and we alluded to this earlier, those Chris Farley moments where it's like, oh, remember when you did that? That was awesome. But at the same time, like,
it's not great.
At one point, I got to meet Stan Lee for 7 seconds and have my interaction. And I got to say, thank you, sir, and get shuffled along. But it meant the world to me just to be able to say thanks.
And I bet he treated it really well.
He was fantastic.
Reacted like he'd never heard it before.
I know.
I got to work for Stan. And we all, on a Boom Studios comic.
Stan Lee presents.
We all thought he was going to be a figurehead. Stan.
Okay.
And then a big panel at Comic-Con, he was late to it, and we were all sort of going, oh, the audience is starting to think we haven't actually got Stan Lee. And he then arrived late, walked down the middle of the aisle and yelling, you know, here I am, and walked around all of us, giving us each a huge introduction, gave us one of those lovely little nicknames, and he just had emergency dental surgery at the age of 80-something before he walked in the building. Goodness. And he was a firecracker on stage. Then behind the scenes, he was like, okay, so what you got to do is this, and he was really precise. And you thought, okay. Oh, I see.
You got the Marvel method, though, right there. Here's what you got to do, go do it.
Yeah, and I recall having an hour-long editorial meeting with him on the phone. I think I said 2 sentences and as good, better than people still underestimate him. He is not valued enough, incredibly.
Oh, absolutely. So my follow-up is, what's your nickname? Pizzazzy Paul?
I was pulsating Paul Cordell.
Oh, that is
awesome. Oh, nice. That you should put on an award and put up on your wall, like a Stan Lee called me.
Pulsating. I don't know. If you get in the space of a movie monster, it's pulsating.
Yeah. Don't think about it too much, but it's an honor for sure.
Well, I am really glad that we're talking about some of these positive things about the, because there is the dark side that you bring up in the book. I mean, you don't shy away from that. You don't shy away from the fact that, you know, women and minorities basically kind of crapped on for a large majority of comic books, and the fact that, like, finally they're getting to some sort of prominence. And there was one of that great scenes in the book, which I cheered. I really did. I cheered when she was like, why isn't there a man in comic books panel? Well, that's every single other that ever existed since the dawn of time. And so, like, again, those things need to be just put out there and reminded that, like, that's the thing, and that's why we're doing this.
That was a specific year of at various Comic Cons where the women in comics panel kind of rebelled. And Marika, my artist collaborator, is on that panel. She drew herself into it.
Nice. That was a question I have, just because we're in Pittsburgh, and recently things have come out about a local Pittsburgh comic guy where it's not flattering. It doesn't look good. But in the industry, I'm sure there are tons of wonderful people out there working in comics, but there are those handful of bad actors in there. And so how has that affected you in your career? Is it something where, like, can you separate the art from the artist, or be like, oh, I know this guy's working with that editor and he's a...
I'm not about to separate the art from the artist. I mean, never mind that guy, as it were. I've walked away from a couple of things, and I think it's important to say, sometimes when you later discover what somebody's done, and the extent of one's interaction with said editor is that you had 2 business meetings with them when it was only the 2 of you in attendance.
Right.
You know, it's hard to tell what somebody's like in private sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some people you get a feeling about, and some people are just financially dodgy. Never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind.
It's a carny industry.
Yeah.
You get those folks, it attracts all kinds.
It's still the Wild West for good and evil. We are the least regulated of all industries, and it's awful in a lot of ways. But also, it's a roller coaster. It's a thrill ride. But the number of people who have been forced off the road and had their careers ended and ruined through no fault of their own. I mean, the victims of abuse, not the abusers. I hope it's changing, but I wanted to show some of that, and also show how often when somebody is pushed off the building like that, a lot of people just stand around not really helping.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Or they do the cursory things and be like, yeah, I showed them your portfolio.
Or as you point out in this book, they make it about themselves. Like, oh, I would never do anything to make themselves feel better about what's going on. When in fact, all the person just needed was I needed to listen to or genuine empathy for their plight, not so much, you know, oh, I wouldn't do that. Yeah. I'm not, you know.
It's not so much the big two in this book are a different big two, but included in them are figures for both positive and negative. There's an editor who tries to warn our hero, saying, you know, this industry is not your parents. It's not going to show you a duty of care. You know, you've got to make good choices, and he's just not listening.
Sometimes you're blinded by it.
But we've dwelt on the dark side a lot.
That's true.
But some of it is just silly awfulness. Like, there's an anecdote in here that genuinely happened to me. And
is
so
it the
I
cat
thought,
cafe?
It's the cat cafe.
Oh, I love that.
And so I put in the script, this is me. And, you know, I don't think there's any harm in me being the victim of it in the comic as well. So there I am. And I should not. When I discover that a meeting I have scheduled is at a cat cafe, where I'm going to be swarmed over by cats, being hugely allergic to cats, I really should have the courage to cancel the meeting.
Oh, I love the panel that, you know, I don't think I got the job, where your face is all puffy and
not
coming out of your nose. I mean, did Gerard show you the pictures of how she was going to draw you all up before? Or?
No, but she's made me look much handsomer than beforehand than I am. So.
I thought it was a good representation up until all the swelling.
Bless you. Up until the pulsations.
Maybe that's where pulsations come the nickname. Back. That brings up, for me, when you're writing this, like the Cat Cafe anecdote, where there's some that you just are laughing. I know when I heard this story originally many years ago, I knew I was going to use it. I finally get to use this anecdote. Yeah. What was some of your, like, the favorites that you had to include?
Well, I genuinely got my pocket picked by a famous, very drunk creator beside me at the bar at a convention once, who decided that that he didn't have any money left in his pockets, but this person next door to him did.
Oh my goodness. All right, give us the name, or at least give us some clues.
No.
Come on, who dat?
No.
That's okay.
I didn't have him reported to the police and arrested, as happens in the comic.
No. But that ended up saving the guy, turning his life around. In the book, that which was quite nice too.
That hasn't happened in real life. No.
Now, have you had the experience where you've delivered the panel in the room of two people? Because
yes,
we might have as well.
I've done worse. Me and one other panelist to one person, and we left the stage and came and sat and stared right at them.
Just steering into the skid. If this is going to be awkward, let's make it awkward.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
The one person, were they a charming attendee? Did they actually have a lot of questions and things?
They did. They were into it. They were there for that panel. And so,
we
genuinely did it. We you know, as long as there's a person there who wants that, we will do it.
A victory is a victory. You had a victory.
That is that positivity. I mean, you do have some, and I'm sure that meant a lot to that person, because they're like, I have Paul Cornell for an hour. I love this. I don't need a podcast. I don't need anything. I got a chair and a table. I'm good to go.
And all he's going to talk about is Robin Hood, which was the theme of the panel.
So a lot of the enjoyment we had from reading this, you know, there's a bit of that fly on the wall trying to figure, oh, you know, who could that be, or you know, where did this take place? Have you had any feedback from creators, from people within your own community who have read this and recognized that story or this story, or it's like, oh yeah, I remember that happening?
Well, one of the wonderful things about this book is the sheer number of blurbs we've had from fellow creators. And I think a lot of it is because they recognize, you know, the stories. And we've got a nice amount of attention from fellow pros. And I think somebody was always going to write a book, maybe not in terms of fiction, but maybe just a collection of anecdotes. But I think we've definitely represented a strain that had not been put out there before of genuine pro anecdotes.
Yeah. Oh, this is wonderful for folks like us to get that peek behind the curtain. And sure, we walk past the, you know, the people at their tables at their booths every year, like, ah, this is my last year. Ah, and they're back.
Yeah, oh, I love that. Yeah.
Those two dealers who are immortal, they are the same throughout the entire. they always say, this is my last year, the dealers, because they always say that.
Yep. And then they put their re-up for the booth before the con ends. You know they're coming back.
Well, it definitely scratched an itch for us. And we've got more talk with Paul Cornell right after these commercial breaks with other projects he's working on now, as well as Chad finally gets to pick his brain about Captain Britain. Stay tuned.
If you're an indie creator looking for a home for your comic book, graphic novel, short story collection, or novel, then you've come to the right place. AnyOneWorld is a full-service publisher and distributor which can take your creator-owned project and showcase it to the world. We offer two primary distribution channels. Digital distribution, where we'll sell your book in our digital bookstore. Digital and print distribution, where we'll sell your book in our digital bookstore and distribute through physical bookstores across the UK, USA, and Canada. In addition to distribution, AnyOneWorld can also work with you to publish your book. We'll publish your book digitally, helping you source artists, edit, format, and publish your book in digital format. Digital and print. We'll publish your book digitally and produce and distribute print copies of your work. Digital, print, and merch. We'll publish digital and print copies of your book and then work with you to design or distribute products and add-ons such as t-shirts, posters, and more. On top of all of this, we can offer additional paid services where required, specifically cover design, editing, and formatting. Unlike many traditional publishers, AnyOneWorld gives indie creators maximum control and flexibility over publishing and distribution. So if you're looking to partner with us to distribute existing books or publish something new, read carefully through the information below and fill out a submission form.
LastComicShopPodcast.com is the destination for all things shop. Plan your week with upcoming show schedules, the latest books, recommendations, and chatter from the crew. Subscribe to the show on all major podcasting platforms from one convenient location. Show your support and browse the merch store. T-shirts, tanks, hoodies for the fam, coffee mugs, magnets, totes, and more. Check out exclusive content through the show's YouTube channel and follow the pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, and others. All this and so much more at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time to have Chad.
That's right. We have Paul Cornell. He's a legendary writer, Doctor Who, you know, novels, comics throughout the years. I want to talk about from this point to this point in your career, a very long time ago, when
listeners, Chad is holding up two fingers and not in that way.
That's just very, very minute points in the timeline, like circa 2007, 2008, when Marvel had seemingly just gave you England. Yes. Like, you'd started off with a Pete Wisdom book and then took over Captain Britain and the MI-13 after that. And it was just one of the best books, like, that was coming out at the time. I should let you talk about it.
Well, thank you.
What was going on there?
It's one of my favorite times in comics. I really loved that run. And as you say, basically have Marvel Britain to the extent where when I spoof the readers into thinking that Britain has been invaded by vampires and cut off from the rest of the world by an energy barrier, and that's just the way it is in the Marvel Universe now. There's no other book to contradict that.
And, there you go. And you go deep. You put out Die Cut.
Oh, yes. I wanted to bring back some of the many heroes created by Marvel UK and their sudden and extraordinary boom in the 90s.
And then they were gone just as quick.
Yeah.
But this period in Marvel is one of my favorite time periods because you have off on the cosmic side of things, you had the Abnett and Lanning, and they had maybe started cooking maybe a year or two earlier. What was it like? Did they really just say, hey, you can zone this off and you can have all of this? Or what was editorial like?
Not in so many words. It was a lovely editorial process. But, you know, there were just no other books interested in Britain at that point. Coming out of Secret Invasion, where the world really was split up and we were all allowed to do a specific thing, you know, like
right.
Greg Pak was off with his Hercules fighting the gods.
Oh, and that was wonderful.
It was.
With Amadeus Cho and all the...
Yeah. I've just novelized the Secret Invasion comics and got to...
Oh, really?
And I got to write in some new bits of Captain Britain and Pete Wisdom. And
John the Skrull there too?
No, because, you know, don't want to...
well, okay.
So don't this want is... to attract the attentions of the copyright people. Fantastic artwork from Leonard Kirk, and I got to explore Britishness. You know, I have this powerful feeling about Captain Britain that very few heroes have been deconstructed as much as he has. He's barely been constructed across his existence. He or now she, it's always a process of, and this is the post-colonial stuff. This is the post-imperial malaise. This is right. British writers can't imagine constructing that character. And so I thought, let's do that. Let's try and make a Captain Britain that works for now, moving in a positive direction rather than being a negative commentary. And there was this ridiculous fan feeling that he was an alcoholic because he got drunk twice in Excalibur. And then when one of his friends called him on it, stopped drinking in the way that alcoholics don't.
Right.
And, you know, so one of the earliest scenes is him having a beer because he can, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And
I was a huge fan of the Secret Invasion story just for a couple lines. Again, there's one line where it's actually even almost like metafictional, where he's like kind of saying like, I should be like the Captain America. I should be somebody that stands up and like people, you know, and so that's what I'm going to do. Like, it's like he almost is telling himself, he's giving himself a pep talk. Like, I should do this. Like, I was like, good for you, Paul. Like, that is what he should have that job. So I fell for it. I was just like, yeah, let's go with this. Let's have him self-sacrifice and get Excalibur and all this wonderful stuff. The other thing that I wanted to kind of gush about was, up until that book, I didn't really understand what the Siege Perilous was. They're X-Men fans. I'm not an X-Men fan. I was like a Fantastic Four and Avengers fan. The Siege Perilous was always kind of goofy. But when you were said magic is like fiction and how Britain has all this wonderful fiction and that's what creates the magic, for the first time ever, it was just like, okay, this makes sense to me now. Like, this is why they would have fairies and goblins and orcs and things. Like, it's because it's imagination. It's like Harold and the Purple Crayon. It's that stuff. So, thank you.
I think he's trying to say they gave England to the right guy. You seem to really tap into all those British themes.
Well, thank you. I mean, the matter of Britain is something that's always been part of my work. You know, I'm very much into the mythology, and it's really been pleasing to me how one aspect I created, the idea that Captain Britain, when it's Brian Braddock, his powers depend on his confidence.
Right.
That seems very British to me. And I'm really pleased that future writers kept that. It's also been a great pleasure that Faiza Hussain is still out there and still carrying Excalibur. Having her take the sword out of the stone, that was really important for me. And I'm really glad that we were cancelled, but we were told quite a long time before the last issue, so we had time to do a proper ending, and how few comics get that.
I was going to say, too, it's shocking to me that the sales weren't off the charts on this, just because I remember the buzz around the book. Like, everybody seemed to know that it was good stuff. Why is this book not still going?
Our second arc, you know, the Mindless Ones in Birmingham, just dropped it through the floor.
He got it Blade. He brought Blade in.
Yeah. We recovered quite a lot. We actually sold out of an issue in the last arc. But at that point, it doesn't make any difference to comic shops. They're not going to order more. You know, that was frustrating.
That is regrettable. There were a handful of books from that time period that just got the axe too early. And this was definitely one of them. I would have loved to have seen this carry on for another 100 issues.
Well, I was just pleased to underline the fact that Blade is British. I mean, it's not something that comes up very often, but yeah, he was born in London in the 1800s.
That's great. Now, yeah, all the vampire stuff, like I said, it just seemed like so many of those British themes you got to dance with and just tell some great stories. So any plans for like an omnibus collection, or is this still out there, or do people have to track it down the old-fashioned way?
I mean, they're fairly easy to get on eBay. I would love an omnibus, but, you know, we're kind of the last to know about that stuff.
Okay, we've got to manifest it. Put it out there in the universe. We need this omnibus. Yeah,
positivity. There is going to be an omnibus. You heard it from here, the last comic shop. J.A. has a whole shelf full of omnibuses. He needs to be able to put it on his shelf with all the rest of the ones.
There you go. And then you could include in the back matter some explanations about this whole cricket thing, because I was bothering Jay beforehand. What is an LBW? What does this mean? And
well, I'm pleased that we've now entered the cricket section of the podcast. So allow me to explain in some detail. I'm a huge cricket fan, and so I really wanted to do a cricket seed, and it caused... We had Mike Collins on art for that, so at least it was a British artist, but... the poor old colorist, Christina Strain, she really worked to get the right colors for a cricket pitch. And we're just looking forward to the new season currently. And I have my, Andrew is holding up one of Gideon Haig's cricket books. So I believe I'm in presence of a fellow aficionado.
You are.
What do you make to Bazball then?
Oh, I don't know. I like test cricket. I like 5-day test cricket.
Me too.
Anything that reduces it to 3 days or 4 days, I think is a travesty.
I really
love that documentary, Death of a Gentleman.
I cannot agree. I think English cricket needed that sense that we're not going to be emotionally beaten. that the win is us playing at our best and hardest and fastest. That we're not being overshadowed by the prospect of losing, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, you two, you've got lost expressions on your faces now.
I have no idea what you're talking about. No,
I just learned about chucking and how you're not allowed to chuck, although,
you can't throw.
How can you throw that way? You gotta
it's like a whole motion. Going back to Doctor Who, there was a great documentary, I think it was on VHS at the time, there's some great cricketer, and he was just like, I loved when Peter Davidson was the doctor because here's the doctor playing cricket, and you know, I would just tune into Doctor Who. And
that was Mike Gatting, and I sent him a copy of my Doctor Who book with him in it, goth opera.
Okay, well, thank you for indulging me about Captain Britain. It turns out you've done work since then.
Yes, yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Right. To close out the show, what else other than Conanon do you have coming out soon or out now that you can talk to about?
Two huge things happening this week, one of which is myself and Valeria Berzo, the artist, have just been Hugo Award nominated for The Witches of World War II, which was a graphic novel we had out from TKO last year. And that's about the real life magic users in Britain in the war, like Aleister Crowley and his circle and four others. Fantastic characters. And we have essays in the back from historians about the real stuff. We take them on an adventure into Nazi Germany, which didn't happen. And the book never really settles on whether or not magic is real. So I'm very proud of that. And Valeria's art is just gorgeous. 1940s fashions and... incredibly atmospheric. And also, me and the great cartoonist Rachel Smith have a crowdfunder going at the moment from Loop, Z-O-O-P, the wonderful people who did the completed Saucer Country with me.
Yes.
We are doing Who Killed Nessie?
Yes!
Which is a cozy comedy cryptozoological whodunit.
Do we get Zygons? Please tell me we get Zygons.
I knew you were going to go there. There's Yeti. It's an annual convention of cryptids. And all the humans leave the hotel, except they've left the intern. And then the Loch Ness Monster is murdered, and nobody knows who did it. And so the cryptids approach her and say, "You're the only being we trust. We don't trust each other. Could you solve this murder?"
Oh, wow. So,
the art is cute as anything. Rachel's got amazing cute artwork. And if you search for Nessie, N-E-S-S-I-E, and Zoop, Z-O-O-P, you will find the page, you'll see the artwork. We're over a third of the way there after 2 days. So I'm told that's good going. And
that sounds awesome. It's like Murder on the Orient Express, except with Bigfoot and Nessie.
There is Yetis, Krakens, the Stink Ape, the Jersey Devil.
You're the only person we can trust.
Yes.
To find out who killed this jacket.
The beast of Bodmin Moor, the Yowie. I could go on.
A lot of fun, like, doing the research on all these different cryptids to include in the...
Well, yeah, but I've been inured in this stuff since I was a kid. Reading books about cryptids under the covers. I mean, I did another little... for Ahoy, I contributed to their Project Cryptid comedy anthology.
Yes.
A story about the Mongolian death worm.
Right.
And... You know, the Mongolian deathworm, that's the deep cut. So, and I just me when me and Rachel were talking, we've always wanted to do a project together because she did some of the backups in my Four Doctors comic for Titan. Yes. And she drew comedy David Tennant backups for 3 years. We've always wanted to work together. We were just talking to each other. And we got a sudden vision of the cover of a bit of chalk line around Nessie on the floor of a convention ballroom.
Was that also blurry? Or no, I'm thinking Bigfoot is always blurry, not Nessie. Oh.
No, it's great humor, too. I was like, she's eating Yeti-flavored potato chips. No, that's just a marketing gimmick.
Oh, well, I've started them now.
Yes, no, it's going to
be... I love the expressions on the face of those fairies when they look at the packet and see the ingredients. It's...
So some great, great stuff out there from Paul Cornell. Make sure that you're picking up Conan on. Make sure that you're supporting Who Killed Nessie. Just search for Nessie and Zoop. That's all you got to do. Help make sure that that book sees, because it's that sounds great. I honestly, and again, Witches of World War II out there. We hope. And they now they mentioned that it's a finalist. Now that's the same thing as being
it's a nomination. Okay. It's we're on the short list. There's five titles. I'm going to get my bottom kicked by Wonder Woman Historia, I'm fairly sure.
Oh well, just I mean
no, you know it, don't you? You know it. That was
there's no Wonder Woman in that book.
There's a Wonder Woman, her mom. They just used her name to sell that book. It's her, her mom is in that book. She was a Wonder Woman. Any case, maintaining positivity for you, Paul. We're hoping that you have two Hugos eventually right next to each other. One for podcasting, one for comic books. And then you'll run the gamut. So I real quickly, before we let you go, where can folks find you every single day out there on the socials?
I'm on Instagram and I'm on Blue Sky and I'm on LinkedIn. And I've got a blog at paulcornell.com where you'll find my link tree and find everything.
You have a Substack too, right? Don't you have a Substack?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, and you'll find a link to my Substack newsletter, which comes out every Friday. And it's got all my news, but it's also got a section people seem to really like where I talk about my life with my autistic son.
Okay.
And so we talk about the continuing challenges of that. And a lot of the audience are just there for that, honestly. I have a meetup at the Gallifrey One convention of newsletter subscribers. And the first thing is always, so how is Tom? Oh. And so, you know.
That's wonderful. So make sure that you're subscribing to the Substack and getting these great and wonderful and heartfelt updates from Paul. But thank you so much, Paul, for being on the show. Thank you so much for talking about Conan and Doctor Who and Captain Britain and just so much wonderful stuff. We have got a
Hammer
blast.
Horror movies.
Yeah.
I've got to go back and find the episode where you cover Dracula 80, 1972.
Oh, yeah, we did that a few months ago.
I have so many Pete Wisdom questions. We'll have to save that for another show.
Yes, we hope that you come back to the last comic shop with more of your projects in soon, Paul.
By all means, have me back. I would love to be back on.
All right. Well, thank you so much, sir. We'll see you in the funny pages. All right. So that was an awesome interview with Paul Cornell. Thank you so much, Paul, for being on the last comic shop. We really do appreciate you being on, and we hope that you go out there and pick up all of that wonderful work that he's doing, whether you're looking back issues and pick up some of his Captain Britain work or some of his other stuff that he did. I think he was on Wolverine as well. But make sure that you're supporting his Zoop.
Yeah, Who Killed Nessie? And then the witches in England.
The witches of World War II.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to have to track that one down just because in the convo we talked about, you know, all those British themes, but you can see the World War II influence spread out throughout Paul's work and the magic there. And I can't wait to see how he's working with that historic fiction, melding those things together. I'm really pumped.
And make sure that you check out the read pile for this week. That's Conan. It is in comic book shops now, whether you find it in single issues or you find that awesome trade that Ahoy just put out. And make sure that you're also checking out The Last Comic Shop for more interviews with creators coming up in the rest of 2024, as well as past creators. We have awesome episodes in our archives, whether we were talking to Kyle Starks, which we did this year, whether we talked with folks like the legendary Roy Thomas, Kelly Thompson, the editor-in-chief of Ahoy Comics, Tom Pyre, Mark Russell, who's done some work over at Ahoy Comics. all these wonderful interviews in our archives. Make sure you're checking it out over at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
And don't forget to check us out on the socials. You can find things like polls. You can find the Golden Age covers to put you to bed at night. You could find references that'll lead you back to our website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where people can find what else, J.A.?
Well, they can find links to our merch store. We've got t-shirts, we've got tote bags, coffee mugs. This week, a special on white cricketing outfits. So if you want to go play cricket.
LBW, LBW.
That's right. Don't chuck.
Beautiful white trousers.
So much I don't understand. Who plays a game for 5 days?
And we don't really have a lot of recommendations other than, again, pick up all of Paul Cornell's awesome books. Those are enough recommendations to last you a lifetime.
Who killed Nessie? Witches of World War II? Captain Britain and the MI-13? Cotton On, all kinds of great Paul Cornell stuff out there.
And all this cool Doctor Who stuff. The goth opera, when it's released on audio, like, it's going to have the original cast. That's great. We hope to bring you more episodes of The Last Comic Shop that you think is great. Until next week, when we've got another wonderful one with 8 Billion Genies. Chad's been champing at the bit to read. I'm the host with the most, Andy Larson. I'm joined by Chad Smith and J.A. Scott. And we hope that you stay safe. Stay talking, especially to people like Paul Cornell that, like, again, are awesome to talk to.
And so kind, hope, so gracious.
Yes, just wonderfully British. Just wonderfully British. That's all I got to say about that. Charming, debonair.
Self-deprecating.
Has to be reminded how great he is, and he really is great.
And helps us understand cricket.
The Last Comic Shop Podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.